Well, hello there. Welcome along and thanks for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. Coming up, we'll be chatting all things soccer or football. Maybe we shouldn't go down that rabbit hole again. Anyway, reaction from the various Premier Division games played over the weekend. James O'Toole is at the back of the classroom, sniggering away. How are you, James?
Always that one, Adrian. Don't bring that one up again. That's a rabbit hole that we go down several times.
The football soccer?
Yeah, just don't go there.
Yeah, we've lots to chat about, James. Is there anything that happened over the weekend? Happened at Tala that I missed?
No, I don't think so. No controversy at Tala whatsoever. None.
A one-all draw. We'll come on to that.
Yeah, one-all draw was a good result.
Yeah, we'll talk about that throw-in. And we were joined as well by Gary Rogers. We'll also be mentioning Leicester's FA Cup win. And we'll be rounding up the action in the Women's National League over the course of the weekend. Now, it's one of the great sights in football. A team is looking for a goal in the dying seconds, as close to the last play of the game. They win a corner kick, and up comes the goalkeeper. The fans are on the edge of their seats, and the big, tall, lopey goalkeeper, insert Gary Rogers here if you want, comes lumbering up and invariably finds himself nowhere near the object known as a football. But not Liverpool's Alisson Becker. 1-1 with West Brom, injury time on Sunday, in the chase for top four. And guess what happened next?
Alisson is up from the back, and it comes, Alisson! Oh, would you believe it? The Liverpool goalkeeper, in injury time, has won it for Liverpool!
I'm too emotional this last month for everything that happened with me, with my family. But football is my life. I play since I remember as a human being with my father. I hope he was here to see it, but I'm sure that he's seeing with the guard on his side and celebrating. I can't be more happy than I am now.
Yeah, absolutely emotional, understandably so. Alisson Becker of Liverpool winning 2-1. It's been a very tough time for him, of course. He lost his dad in February, and just a few days before the game on Sunday, his wife gave birth to their third child. But he certainly was on the mark yesterday. It was a great header, Gary, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a brilliant header. You know, I think most strikers would be proud of it. You look at the technique of it and the way he finished it. You think he knocks him in like that every week, but it was a fantastic moment from. I'd never experienced that in my career, scoring a goal like that. But I'm sure he's absolutely on cloud nine with it, and he gave a terrific interview afterwards. And you could see it's always nice to see, like, I suppose, the emotional side of players as well. And you know, you see that raw emotion as you know, compared to the mundane interviews that you generally give or you see. So it was fantastic.
And when you're going up for those late corners, you know, in your playing days, what's going through your mind? I mean, like, would you have trained for that kind of scenario at all? Like, you know, when we see the goalkeeper going up, we say, oh, this is just a hopeful punt into the area and the goalkeeper's going to try and fling himself at it. But did you ever actually, in training, try it out just to see, you know, what position you'd take in the set piece?
No, I was too busy practicing corner kicks, you know. That was my job. But yeah, no, there's no training goes on, especially me heading the ball. It's very rare I would have headed it. But you go up there more hopeful of getting, you know, that nobody picks you up and you might get on the end of something. But he went up there with a real impetus right into the centre of the 6-yard box and sent home a wonderful header. It was like I said, it's a brilliant moment for him. I think, you know, it's one of those things that you'll cherish for your whole career. Sadly, I never scored one or came anywhere close to scoring one. But yeah, a brilliant moment.
Yeah, James, before we started the podcast, you were saying that you're doing a bit of goalkeeping coaching. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been roped into our underage GAA goalkeeping coach. I played in goal up until I was about 21. So, yeah, it's a good crack.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I played in the FA Cup as well. Yeah. No, I was all right. I wasn't wonderful. I was my height helped, to tell you the truth, because I was always 6'4" from when I was about 10. So that kind of helped. It's kind of, he could do no damage if he's back there, kind of. Do you know what I mean? That's where it came from. But no, it's great. One thing has to be said about this as well, actually. Trent's ball for a corner is absolutely superb as well. The height on it, the power on it, as well as the header. But the header is just absolutely cracking. We were talking as well about, was it Gary, you said Mark Travers scored a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, Mark Travers scored one recently for Bournemouth, and then it equalised and they went on and won in a penalty shootout. So, you know, he scored quite recently. I remember Conor Kearns, I think, scored an overhead as well. and Matt Gregg, I think, scored, but it was from a kick out. So like, there's been a few goals, and I think you were saying that Jimmy Glass scored. I remember that for Carlisle to stay up on the last game of the season. That was pretty dramatic as well.
Yeah, that was 99, I think it was. Last game, last minute to stay in the Football League of 99. So that was a class one, actually. He was on loan at Carlisle at the time as well. He was drafted in. They got special dispensation because they had no goalkeeper, so he was able to draft them in. So that made that one even better for them.
Yeah, well done to Alison Becker. Okay, then let's round up the action from the Premier Division over the course of the weekend, and we'll get the thoughts of the lads in due course. Let's start at Tallaght Stadium, shall we? Shamrock Rovers 1, Derry City 1. Derry in front through a penalty from Will Patching early in the second half, cancelled out by Rory Gaffney on 56 minutes. We'll come back to the controversy about that goal and the manner in which it was scored very shortly. But first of all, let's hear from the Derry City manager, Rory Higgins.
I'm very proud of them. I thought they put in an absolutely courageous performance, and I actually feel slightly aggrieved that we haven't gone away with 3 points. I think it was clear to see that they've taken this throw-in 15, 20 yards ahead of where it should have been. But listen, we've come to the best team in the country and we've put on a really brave display and taken a point away, so we can't be too disappointed.
Particularly in the first half, I thought Derry City played a really clever tactical game. Was that the way you wanted to play it here today, to try and catch Rovers on the break? You had several opportunities in that regard.
Yeah, we obviously, when you come here or when you play anybody, you have to have a plan. And fortunately for us, it doesn't always happen, but the plan worked today. We've limited them to a couple of chances. As I said, they're a brilliant footballing team. They're a really good team, and they've great attacking players. And I think we've nullified their threats quite well overall. But in saying that, if you finish ahead of Shamrock Rovers this year, you won the league. So now they're the benchmark, without a shadow of a doubt. They're the benchmark for everyone to try and get to. But we leave here satisfied with a point.
You managed to get your noses ahead. Did it disappoint you that you couldn't stay ahead for a little bit longer?
Yeah, that was the most disappointing thing. And again, the throw-in's been taken ahead, 15, 20 yards ahead of where it should have been. And if it's taken in the right position, then we mightn't have conceded. So slightly disappointed with that. But anyway, we move on.
Yeah, quite measured. Rory Higgins speaking to Stephen Alkin after the game on Saturday evening in Tallaght Stadium. James, most people will be aware of what happened with the throw-in incident, but perhaps for those who didn't catch up on it, either on Watch LOI or social media, you might just explain, if you can, what occurred.
So basically, Liam Scales has the ball at his feet going down the left-hand side of the pitch, the camera side of the pitch, if you know Tallaght Stadium, opposite to the dugouts. Thompson slides in, knocks the ball out. Ball goes out of one position on the pitch, and in Tallaght Stadium they have, it's like most stadiums around the country at the minute, because we're not allowed to have ball boys, there's balls situated maybe every 15, 20 yards along the touchline. Scales runs off to get the one to the left-hand side, picks it up, throws the ball in, while Derry are still looking at a ball on the pitch and where the ball should have been thrown in for. Graham Kelly continues to play on. It catches our cameraman out and everything, catches the commentator out, catches everybody out. It's done so quickly. And in goes, in they go, and they equalise, and it's 1-1. And Gaffney, at that stage, Gaffney, in fairness to him, it's a very good finish. Goalkeeper tries to make the angle as small as possible, and it's a really, really good finish. And listen, this isn't the first time a throw-in hasn't been taken from the correct position, but I think it's probably the furthest distance away from where a ball's gone out. I was politely reminded yesterday, I was given the information yesterday, that the advertising hoardings at Tallaght Stadium are 10 metres long. So if you gather that from the opposite angle, he's taken at least 3 advertising hoardings away from where it goes out. So I'll let you know the distance of where he's taken it. But they're the breaks you get in football. And you have to be switched on to absolutely everything. Like, this isn't, like, I've seen people on Twitter, I've got abuse on Twitter over this, actually saying it's a Shamrock Rovers thing. It's not. It just happened. You have to get on with it, and that's the way football goes. It's unfortunate to get on with, and the only person at fault here is Graham Kelly and his assistants.
Yeah, you've described it very well there, James. You've drilled it down into this a bit. The two balls on the pitch, you've been looking at the rulings there.
Yeah, two balls on the pitch.
It's changed.
That doesn't matter anymore. Once it's not interfering with play, and as you look at it, the ball arrives, it comes off the hoarding and comes to, I think it's Ronan Finn's feet, and you can see Graham Kelly's positioning is very, very good on the pitch. He can see the ball around Finn's feet. continues to look at it once the ball's been thrown in and Ronan just knocks it off the pitch. So therefore, it's not interfering with play and it's fine for them to get on with it. I think the last controversy we probably had with two balls on the pitch was a cup final. I think it was Waterford versus Longford, was it? Where a goal was scored while the ball was on the pitch and the defender was kicking it off. So I think that's one of the last major ones. Derry fans will bring me back to Morton Stadium where Rovers scored against Derry with two balls on the pitch that day as well. But that's many, many years ago. But that doesn't count anymore. So that's not part of the reasoning why the goal shouldn't have stood. The reasoning is that no matter if you're playing multi-ball or not, the ball still has to be thrown in from the position where the ball left play. And this definitely wasn't.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it, Gary? The throw-in was taken miles from where the ball went out.
Yeah, it's a horrendous decision. I think Rory Higgins, I think he was quite measured, as you said in his interview, he would be absolutely fuming with that. It was so far away from, the spot. I know James is saying about the two balls on the pitch, but the other ball possibly could have been interfering with play if it went back and took it, the throw-in from where it was supposed to be. And it's moments like that that games are won and lost. And there's been numerous, errors in terms of refereeing this year where, them decisions have had a significant effect on the games and, really kind of influenced the outcome of games. I look back to maybe Sligo Rovers had a goal disallowed the first game of the season against Dundalk. These moments, they mean a hell of a lot to players and to teams over the whole course of a season. And that would have been a significant result for Derry City had they gone on and won the game. That's a big task considering the way Shamrock Rovers have been etching out results in the last minutes of the game. But that's a basic error. That is a really basic refereeing decision that shouldn't go wrong. You can understand. Maybe an offside decision or something like that. That's really tight, like the one we've seen in the cup FA Cup final yesterday. There are marginal calls, and if you get that one wrong, you could say, look, that's a small mistake. But this is a really basic error.
Just playing devil's advocate for a moment, Gary. Fans get frustrated when referees, if a player goes to take a throw and then he's whistled back to move back to take it from the correct position. Fans get, he's been overly fussy. You'd often have heard that been said. Oh, he's way too fussy, just whistling up. Let the game flow. But I think in this instance, there's been fussy and there's been, a player basically stealing more than 10 yards. I mean, it was 10, 20 yards up the pitch, it would appear, certainly from the video evidence.
Yeah, and I think, fans do get fussy about it. Sometimes the decision of the throw-in is not as cut and dry either. It should be a throw-in the opposite direction and they get small ones like that wrong. But this is, there is no excuse for it. It's 20, 30 yards in the difference and, a goal comes off the back of it. So, it's very disappointing, obviously, for Derry City. Obviously, Shamrock Rovers will be delighted with it. They've benefited from it in this instance. It's a poor decision. It ultimately could have cost Derry City the 3 points. I know that they picked up one, but to go away to Shamrock Rovers, the champions, and to pick up a win would be a real boost for them. And Rory Higgins has done a brilliant job since he's gone in there. He's really steadied the ship and got good points on the board and has had a huge impact on the club since he's gone in.
It's interesting though, because I'm sure Gary's seen this playing throughout the year and what have you. When a referee makes a bad decision, he usually gives another decision soon after it. And after that throw-in decision, I think he pulled back three throw-ins after that for not being taken in the exact same position. Yeah. And it's just crazy. I don't know how, Gary, you'd know, talking to referees on the pitch, do they talk back to you? Would there have been a discussion between players and the ref on that, you reckon, after it happened? Or did some refs just don't talk to me at all?
Yeah, if you look back on the footage of this, the referee, is kind of telling players to get away from him initially. And it can be very frustrating for players sometimes to talk to referees. Some referees are better than others at talking, and then sometimes referees will just go, get away from me, or worse, and have absolutely nothing to do with you. And they're after making a glaringly obvious mistake, and that can infuriate players more. And you look at Ollie Horgan, the amount of times he's got sent off, and Ollie would be protesting. He's not protesting decisions that are completely ludicrous. He'd be contesting decisions that would be in the balance, and they go and send, they give cards to officials and managers, and in some cases they may have been out of order, but a lot of the time, they're contesting genuine decisions. And look, I think the standard of refereeing hasn't been great this year, and I think there's been major decisions got wrong. You look back at the Finity penalty where they sent off, they gave a penalty and sent off Finity, and it was in the balance whether it was a penalty at all. So look, I do think there has to be improvements made there over the course of the season.
And how do you think we should go about that, improving the standard of refereeing in the league? How difficult a task is that?
I think we should get some of the fans in. They seem to know what they're doing. They'd be glad to get in. There'd be loads of lads looking at referee courses now. Get on. I need to get into these games.
Yeah. Well, but that being said, it is, of course, a thankless job. Nobody really, nobody in their right mind, some people might say, would want to be a referee, because you have to put up with so much abuse. But just going back to what happened on Saturday night, the referee's assessor would have been there. Now, in your experience, Gary, in terms of, match reports, does much happen after those match reports go in? Like, surely the assessor would have witnessed what occurred and said, well, that's a clear and obvious mistake and action has to be taken. But what's your experience of referees when they do make mistakes and the referee's assessor sends in his report?
Yeah, well, look, it's hard to gauge what, because it's not publicised what actually happens, whether the referee doesn't referee next week and he's bumped down to fourth official. Like, there is... I suppose there's not enough referees probably coming through courses at the minute, and it is an issue, I think, for the FAI and the referees. But like, it's never been easier to referee a game right now. When you think of it, there's no fans in there, and and that can have an effect on decisions when fans are baying for your blood in games. And so that basic decision that we're talking about today, that should be got right, to be pulling lads up then for the rest of the game on short, small infringements for throw-ins, when you've made a massive mistake, it's just not good enough. It's difficult to gauge what I suppose they can do if the numbers are short in terms of referees. When the assessor does their work and gives their feedback, do they demote them for a week and put them down to the first division, or do they not referee for 2 or 3 weeks? We don't know the details of how they, I suppose, discipline referees internally.
There was a call a couple of years ago that maybe some players should be involved in assessing or helping referees understand what's going on the pitch. And I do remember, and Gary, I don't know whether you were on this or not, but the PFAI did put together a referees course for some of the players a couple of years ago, where they went through the whole referees course to understand where the referee's coming from, why he's making these, or he or she is making the decisions, etc. But I think that is where we may get referees from, is from players who are retiring, have no real interest in coaching, but that could be a line for them to go down, and with the help of the PFAI or the FAI, help them fast track them through the system. Maybe that's an idea for it.
Yeah, well, I know that course, I remember that course, I actually wasn't on it myself, but I know that the likes of Gavin Pearce was on it and a few others, and they found it very beneficial, and obviously to see it from the referee's point of view. So yeah, it certainly is an option, and I think it'd be a welcome option, because it'd be good, because players can often see the little things that other players would do in a game in order to gain an advantage, and would be well aware what players are doing and might see these fouls that can be so infuriating for everybody. So it would be a good tactic in terms of recruiting new blood into the refereeing game.
And bring VAR in, hey? All right, listen, we'll move on.
I don't want that.
No.
Now, at Finn Park in Ballybuffet on Friday night, Harps 1, Dundalk 1. Barry McNamee with a terrific strike to put Harps in front, but Dundalk levelling early in the second half. A first goal for the club from Ole Erik Midtskogen, the Norwegian. We'll hear from Dundalk's sporting director, Jimmy Jilton, shortly. Ollie Horgan, of course, serving a 3-match touchline ban. So here's the Harps assistant manager, Paul Hegarty.
First half, I thought we were excellent, probably as well as we've played all year, and probably we're done at half time, maybe 2 or 3 up. We didn't take our chances, and they were always going to come back in the game. And to be fair, Mickey Duffy cost us more than the second half, and probably at the end up, we probably were grateful to get away with a point.
The goal from Barry McNamee was special, wasn't it, in the first half?
Yeah, it was very, very good, but I thought the tempo that we played at, our passing was very, very good. I thought we cut them open at times, and that, we just didn't get. The final pass, maybe at times, didn't help us, but I thought overall, in that first half, I thought we were very, very good and probably deserved to be maybe a goal or two better off in half-time.
Jim, you get a point at the end of that, but I guess you must be feeling it should well have been 3, perhaps?
Second half, created more chances. First half, abysmal. Fen Harps were so much better in it, in every department. We were lazy in lots of ways. Standards were so poor, couldn't pass the ball. Everything we spoke about Fen Harps and what they do, they were so much better in us. And it took us a half-time rollicking, if you like, to really get our game together, get focused on the game. Second half, definitely better. We missed a great chance. Michael missed a great chance for our post header, but that was about it for 45 minutes. Second half, yes, we got on the front foot. We asked more questions. We played with more intensity and created some decent chances.
Can you pinpoint why in the first half they were so off the game, especially given the events of the last week? People would have expected Dundalk to come out with a point to prove and to show the fans how much they cared, but it was a very lacklustre first half. Would you agree?
Yeah, it was, and I can't give you an answer to that because everything to the build-up of the game in terms of training was very positive. They warmed up. I've seen them warm up. It's one of my pet hates, actually, watching teams warm up before a game because it can lead you into a false sense of security. And we looked sharp. Everything in the change room before the game was sharp. I have to give Fen Harps credit. They set up tactically very well to stop us playing, and they did. And it intimidated us without any shadow of a doubt. We weren't brave enough. We didn't have enough people who were brave enough to take the ball. We didn't pass the ball with any real accuracy or care. And it was poor. It was really poor. The rally cry at halftime was, have to do better. You've got 5-10 minutes to show us that you actually want to go and play. And we did. We came out, to be honest, with a better sense of urgency in our play. But overall, very disappointing.
Now, elsewhere over the weekend, Drogheda United 3, St. Pat's 1. Drogheda 2-0 up before half-time with two fine goals from Dane Massey from a free kick super strike. And Mark Doyle also on target. Nahum Melvin Lambert pulled a goal back for St. Pat's in the second half before Jordan Adiemo sealed the win with a couple of minutes to go. So back-to-back defeats for Stevie O'Donnell's St. Pat's. We'll hear from Alan Matthews in a moment. But first, the Drogheda manager, Tim Clancy, with John Kenny.
Tim, would you say that's your best display of the season?
Display, probably not, no. We've been really good in a lot of games. Probably got the rewards, or maybe got a little bit of luck there tonight that we haven't got in other games. We thought we were excellent against Shamrock Rovers. Here and losing the last minute of the game, and with a very good second half down at Longford as well. But overall, listen, it's a brilliant result for us.
What was the most pleasing aspect? You were 2-0 up at half-time, got a couple of terrific goals, and only two shots on target in that all of the first half. I thought your defensive display was terrific in that first half, especially.
Yeah, very good. We were disciplined with our shape and limited them to very few opportunities. I think our keepers made one save the whole game, and they're a very good team. Like, that's why they're sitting where they are in the league. And the pleasing thing was it's the 3 points. It's the most pleasing thing. And a big character check as well for our lads that haven't been 2-0 up at half time with two fantastic strikes from Dane from the free kick and Doyler from play to then concede a goal against a very good team with 10 minutes left, and to then respond and get Nick one on the break then to kill the game off was probably the biggest pleasing thing.
Yeah, I suppose your message to the players at half time was they were going to come at you, weren't they? They had no option.
Yeah, and
they're good enough.
Yeah, they're a very good team, and they start the game very well up in Richmond when they beat us. Earlier on in the season, they started both halves extremely well. And you see last week against Shamrock Rovers, they were 1-0 up after 3 or 4 minutes. And Burmos had a chance to put the 2-0 up after 6 minutes. So they get out of the blocks really quickly in both halves most weeks. So to ride that storm, and then obviously we conceded when we did, to react and get a goal near the end, it's brilliant result for us.
Alan, second consecutive defeats. What did you make to it?
First half, we didn't really get to grips with the game. Gave away two bad goals from our point of view. Thought the second half performance was excellent. Got one goal back. Didn't unfortunately get the second one. Left ourselves a little bit exposed on the break, and they countered and got the third goal. But I suppose when you look at the game and dust it down, two goals, two strikes. One's a set piece, free kick, good delivery from Dane. And the second one from Mark was, I suppose, dangerous at coming in off his right foot, and he stuck it in the top corner. So I suppose two isolated incidents in the first half. We were 2-0 down. We had to respond. Thought we responded well. Didn't get the equaliser. We kept plugging away and plugging away. Eventually got one. And as I said, threw caution to the wind a little bit. It left ourselves exposed, and they picked us off. So disappointing result. But as I said, we'll reflect on it and over the next couple of days, and then go again for next week.
There you go. That's Alan Matthews at Bishopsgate. Longford Town 0, Bohemians 2. Lovely goal from Liam Burt to open the scoring for Bows. Ali Koosh with the second 2-0 win for the Gypsies. Reaction on the way from there, boss Keith Long. But first, Longford's Dara Doyle.
Disappointing to lose the game 2-0. I think at important times they got their goals. If you look at Burt's goal in there, it was probably at the right time for them. I thought we'd weathered a bit of the play and restricted him to a few chances. He's come in off the left wing and We've seen him do that this season, and again, he's come in, and it's a fantastic strike for the first goal. Again, when they got the second goal, I thought that was a stage where we probably got on top for 5 or 10 minutes, and it looked like we could maybe do something. And against the run of play, they've got a second goal. Like I say, we've threw a few lads on and tried to change the shape, change a few things to try and get back into it. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be for us today.
Was the biggest regret maybe that you didn't really carry a threat to the goal of James Talbot?
Yeah, no, it's disappointing. We probably didn't test them, and that's disappointing. I think the closest we came was to probably an excellent Dylan Grimes free kick that I think, I'm not sure whether it was Wilson or someone at the back post gets ahead on the free kick and it just misses the far corner. But disappointed that we probably didn't test Talbot and Bohemian's goalkeeper more today, and we definitely would have liked to do that to give us a chance of getting something from the game.
Keith, that's an impressive victory and an important one from your point of view.
Any win is a good win, so good to start. Yeah, the second phase of the game with two wins. So we came down here obviously on the back of a good performance last week against Finn Harps, so it was important to follow that up with a good performance today. I don't think we quite hit the heights that we did against Finn Harps, but you know, we've won the game quite comfortably. I don't think James Talbot really has a save to make. We scored a really, really good first goal, and we got a scrappy enough second goal in the second half, and we keep another clean sheet, which is really positive for the group.
We saw you earlier in the season put together back-to-back wins, two wins on the road against Dundalk and against Waterford, and then didn't follow up on those. Now you've got back-to-back again. Is that the message to try and hammer home? We need that consistency now.
Well, that's the challenge, isn't it, going forward for us as a group, is to try and, you know, follow it up and go on a little run if we possibly can, and that's going to be very difficult. We're playing St. Pat's next week in Inchicore. It's a Dublin derby. I don't think league positioning or form really comes into it when you're playing in a derby. So we've lost to St. Pat's at home in Dalymount this year, so we'll go there with a little bit of confidence, having won today, having won last week. But as soon as the whistle goes, it's a game, and it'll come down to who wants it most.
That's Bo's boss Keith Long. The Sligo Rovers Waterford game didn't go ahead at the weekend. Waterford forfeiting the game. You'll recall, of course, last week we discussed at length the Waterford situation around COVID and the match with Drogheda. The under-19s played that game and they were soundly thumped 7-0. So Waterford took the decision this week not to field a team against Sligo Rovers. So we wait to see how that one plays out. Just going back to Finn Park on Friday night, Gary, 1-1 for Dundalk against Finn Harps, against Ollie Horgan's side. Dundalk at the moment still without a manager. Are you surprised it's taken so long?
I'm not really surprised. I'm probably more disappointed that it's taken so long. You know, you look at the previous regime, you know, it was kind of reported that they wanted to leave, so they've had a huge amount of time to get a manager in place. You look at what Derry City did. Declan Levine went, and within 2 days they had a manager. Even Waterford have had a manager in quicker time. So it's glaringly obvious that they need somebody in there to steady the ship. Jim doesn't want the job, and so far, look, hasn't been able to kind of get the players firing and pulling in the one direction. There's been all sorts of problems up there, but you know, fundamental to all that is getting the manager in place, and that needs to be done ASAP, if you like, because you know, Europe is the goal for them now. You know, I think winning a league is certainly beyond them, and the longer they leave it, the harder they're making this challenge of getting into Europe, you know, possible. And look, it's very disappointing for everybody, for supporters of the club. They don't know whether there's a manager coming in or not. The communication between the club and the supporters and the players at times has been very poor. So it's look, it rumbles on, and there's no need for it, you know.
Yeah, and you're close to the club, obviously, you know, from your playing days. You know, you mentioned the fans, and some of the fans obviously unhappy, and there's talk about a protest on Friday in advance of the game with Shamrock Rovers. Can you understand the frustration of the fans?
Yeah, I can understand it. Like, you know, it's very frustrating, I suppose, for fans that have seen such success over a sustained period of time, and to see the way things are going on at the minute. Like, it's carnage up there, because, like, you know, the fans don't know what's happening. And there were certain instances this year where the players didn't even know. Like, Shane Keegan came out recently and said he didn't know he was being made manager until 5 minutes before the press conference. So if this is what's going on, you know, it's no wonder they're in the position they're in, because there's nobody making coherent decisions up there. And look, it's a situation that is rumbling on, and, you know, unfortunately, look, it's what everyone is talking about, as opposed to, you know, what's going on the pitch. You know, you look at your Finn Harps result, great result for them again. They beat Dundalk and they drew with them at home. And we're talking about, you know, the managerial merry-go-round and the situation at Dundalk. You know, we have to give credit to teams who are doing their business right. Like, you look at Drogheda, the situation, they've been flying. They've a really good young manager there, and they've been excellent this season. But yet, a lot of the headlines and a lot of the chat is about Dundalk and what's going on and off the field.
Yeah, as my wonderful wife would attest to, I'm no expert on body language, but Jimmy Jilton definitely doesn't look like a person he wants to take on the job. Every time we speak to him, he's like, oh, even the other day when he said he doesn't like watching warm-ups, that seemed a bit bizarre to me. But as far as the fans are concerned about this, yeah, they're well within their right to have a protest. As Gary said, there's no information coming out. There's no flow of information going from the board to the team to the management out to fans. So fans don't know what's going on. But the one thing I will say is that if you don't want the likes of Peak Six there, you've got to have an alternative that's the exact same as it, that's going to put money in, because you don't want to go back to a place where Dundalk were struggling with relegation, trying to survive on playoffs down in Waterford and drifting back to that. So that's one thing just to keep. I understand the frustration of fans. I understand the frustration of everybody around it. But that's just one thing to keep in their mind as well. Like, you need an alternative that you're going to be happy with to take over before you. But you not push a protest. You're allowed to protest, and fair play to them for organising protests. But just have it in your mind exactly what you want as a solution to it, is all I'd say.
We'll move it on, lads. James, obviously Gary referenced it there, but the job Tim Clancy is doing with Drogheda, what a win that was for Drogheda United over Pats on Friday.
That was a brilliant win. The first half was probably not the best first half of football I've seen, bar the last 3 or 4 minutes, but that's what he had to do. He knows how good Pats are. He had to set his team in, square them off, and make sure they don't lose anything against St. Pats. They did it absolutely professionally. 2 goals, brilliant. But then Pats were struggling to get back into the game. It was absolutely fantastic for Tim and the entire squad. It was a joy to watch them, especially in the second half. Not so much the first half, but especially in the second half.
Okay. Let's move to the First Division and a check on the results over the weekend. Cove Ramblers 1, Shelburne 2. Shells coming from behind to win with goals from Shane Farrell and Ryan Brennan. Shells top of the table, 2 points clear off UCD, who were held scoreless by Cork City at the Bowl. Elsewhere, Bray Wanderers 3, Cabinteely 0. Dylan Barnett, Richie O'Farrell and Gary Shaw with the goals there. Treaty United 1, Athlone Town 0. That's how it finished at Marketsfield. Jack Lynch with the only goal on 22 minutes. So Treaty's good start to the season continues under Tommy Barrett. And Galway United 1, Wexford 0. David Hurley with the winner in the 95th minute. And the new manager of Wexford is on the line, because Ian Ryan is the new manager. He succeeds Brian O'Sullivan. Ian, thanks first of all for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast.
No problem, lads. Pleasure.
It's a fair old challenge, taking over as boss of Wexford. 8 games played, 0 points. What made you accept?
Listen, you're dead right. It's definitely a challenge, and a big challenge, but it's one that excites me. One that I think I can improve. I believe the group of players there are better than the table reflects, and that's up to me to get the best out of them. Now, I know the league well. I know the players around the league very well, and there's also, listen, it wasn't easy leaving UCD. I had a very good job there. I was part of a very good team, a team that's on the incline. So it was a very hard thing to walk away from. But listen, I have ambitions to do well. It was important for me that my first job, I felt I could do something. And I feel I can do something with Wexford and the group of players that is there.
And will you have the opportunity to bring in new players? You say that, you know, one of your attributes is improving players. Clearly, you feel that the players you have, that the panel of players that are available at Wexford, can do better. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I feel there's the nucleus of a good group there, and I believe they can play better and perform better. And it's up to me to come up with a structure and an organised way of doing that to get Wexford's best players playing to their maximum. There probably will be some movement in July, but again, I'm going in there with an open mind that let's get the best out of the players that are there. We've got 6 weeks together before we get to that point.
And Wexford generally, over the years, have drawn on players from, you know, from that region, from the southeast. Is that policy likely to continue, or are you going to cast your net far and wide?
No, listen, the ultimate goal, probably a long-term thing, is to probably have Wexford people playing for Wexford. But in order to do that, probably what's been happening, and this is just me looking from the outside, is Wexford have been losing their better academy players, their younger players, to the likes of the, let's say, the so-called bigger Dublin teams, and maybe even your Waterford or Cork and so on. And my initial challenge, I suppose, is to make the first team as attractive as possible, to keep these players within our own system. And I can only do that by making the first team attractive, but also giving opportunities. And given my background in UCD and developing younger players, that's what I want. So if someone displays the right attitude and the right talent, they're definitely going to get their chance and get their opportunity.
Ian, you were with them, seeing them play up close a couple of weeks ago when UCD gave them a bit of a thumping. They've shipped a lot of goals in certain games, but other games, like even last weekend's game, it's just one goal here, one goal there. So I'm taking it, the defence is something you're going to have to go in and sort out straight off.
Yeah. Listen, you're dead right. You're spot on. When people probably think of defence, they think like, oh, let's park the bus, put people around the 18-yard box. But my belief would be, not so much of a negative spin on the defensive work. Defending happens from the top, and it happens through all the units. So again, it's up to me to come up with a system that allows us to defend properly, rather than defending so deep and kind of inviting teams onto us. But we'll be aggressive with how we do things, both with and without the ball. But yeah, my priority probably at the minute is, let's stop getting beat.
Yeah, the link-up, obviously, working within the confines of UCD over the last couple of years under Colley and then under Moyler, you've gained a lot of experience. Is that link-up going to stay? Because I know that with the Wexford Youths Women, the link-up there with IT Carlo, is that something you're going to look at to bring more into the men's game there as well? That's how you keep your academy players, maybe?
Yeah, listen, that's probably a long-term thing, and to be honest with you, it's probably outside of my remit at the minute. It is something that I will broach once I get my feet under the table. That, listen, on a broader context, I think education and football within the league here, there has to be that link until we can get a more sustainable professional environment for the league as a whole. I would love to see that, not only for Wexford, but throughout the country.
Ian, we don't have fans at the moment, and obviously Wexford is a big sporting county, be it racing, but in particular hurling. And given what you said about building a team and a new identity, long term, would you hope that the Wexford support would continue to grow for the team? You know, it has a solid core base of supporters, but obviously a successful team doing well in the first division would attract more supporters. That has to be part of your hope as well.
Oh, 100%. And they'll play a massive part. Obviously, with the restrictions at the minute, that our hands are tied there. But in the meantime, before we get the clearance to allow fans in, I want to use this time to use it as, let's say, a fresh change for everyone in the Wexford public. Let's change maybe a perception that people have of the football club. Let's make it a positive place to come to. Let's make the games enjoyable. Let's see young players playing with a positive style. Let's see Wexford people getting into the team. And as you said, let's make it attractive for people to come. And not only just come on the one-off, come to stay and to build and grow.
You played yourself, of course, for several clubs, Shamrock Rovers, Longford, Drogheda, Dundalk, the list goes on, and you obviously played for a lot of good managers as well. Is there one manager out of the managers or even coaches that you came across from opposing teams that you'd say, yeah, I like his style, I like the way he goes about his business? Is there an inspirational figure that stands out?
I wouldn't say there's one, but I've had a lot of managers, coaches, and I've taken aspects off them all. I've thought about Pat Scully, my time in Shamrock Rovers there when I was first starting. Pat started with a similar kind of job, you could argue, in Kilkenny, with a young group there, a group with a point to prove, and he turned that Kilkenny team into a success. He was very hard on the standards and the professionalism. That's something that benefited me throughout my career, because I happened to come across a manager like that so young. I've had Alan Matthews, who's a good mentor to me still to this day, that I speak to regularly. I've worked with Collie O'Neill, absolute brilliant coach, brilliant person, great to have. I've had the pleasure of working with Andy there the last couple of years, and again, someone that is exceptionally good at what he does, and someone that I've picked up bits and pieces off over the last couple of years.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck with the job. It's a tough task, but you're clearly up for it and relishing the prospect. And your first game, of course, is against Bray Wanderers on Friday night, so
let's start with.
Anyway, listen, the very best of luck to you.
Listen, thanks, lads.
Yeah, good to hear from Ian Ryan, the new manager of Wexford. So Leicester City won the FA Cup for the first time in their history at the weekend, and they did it with a goal to savour from Youri Tielemans.
And Tielemans is going to hit it, and hit it beautifully. What a shot from Youri Tielemans.
Yeah, what a moment, a fabulous moment for Brendan Rodgers, and of course all Leicester City fans. Were joined on the line by Rob Tanner of The Athletic. Rob, you were there. I guess, first of all, how great was it to be at a match along with 21,000 fans?
It was amazing. Amazing how much noise that many fans actually made. I've forgotten what that actually felt and sounded like to have fans in the crowd. And there's only 20,000 or so in there, but they certainly made their presence felt, and that just added to the whole occasion. And I have to admit, I had a little lump in my throat at the end with some of the scenes and celebrations of the pitch. I'm not from Leicester. I wasn't raised as a Leicester fan, but boy, have I been pulled into this Leicester City story over the last decade since I started writing about them.
Yeah, and it has been some story, the Premier League in 2016 with Ranieri, and the post-match scenes, which you mentioned there, with the owner coming onto the field. You know, the warm embrace of so many players, you know, from Vardy to Kasper Schmeichel, and then the owner, and we know what he's been through in terms of what happened a couple of years ago, lifting the cup and celebrating with the players. It was all very emotional, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And what a contrast to what, you know, we've been seeing over previous weeks at other clubs, you know, protests over their ownership and discontent with the direction their clubs are going in and how they're being run. At Leicester City, they've got owners that are beloved by the supporters. They're very close to the players. The manager himself, Brendan Rodgers, is very close. And you'd think that's unique in football because, obviously, he's the boss. He's the man that hires and fires. And invariably, in football management, you get fired. But Brendan has a very close relationship with Young Top. They both lost their fathers at a young age as well. So that's why you saw those scenes, everybody so close. There's a family feel about the club anyway. It's not the biggest city. It's a one club city and county. Everybody supports and follows Leicester City in the county. So, you know, there's very much a sense of togetherness.
At the same time, not quite a David versus Goliath final, but still a victory, as you mentioned, for a less fashionable club, shall we put it like that, over a club like Chelsea that would have a worldwide reputation, really. And, of course, are in the Champions League final in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it shows how far Leicester City have come, that they went into that final, and I told the bookmakers that Chelsea is the favourites because of the form recently up until the Arsenal defeat. Leicester did start the day and still, at the moment, are above them in the Premier League, and they've been in the top four all season. So that's how far Leicester City have come. But in terms of the FA Cup history, there was a huge gulf. Leicester City have never won the FA Cup before. They've been to four finals famously and lost them all, the last one being in 1969. And that's why it meant so much more to the supporters than it may have done to Chelsea supporters, who are used to seeing their team lift trophies on a regular basis, certainly in recent history. So, it was a very special day all round for Leicester.
Will this bring back the love of the FA Cup is what I want to know, because it was such a good game. The goal was absolutely smashing. Kasper Schmeichel, probably one of the games of the season he's had. Some of the saves he pulled off were excellent. A VAR decision for not an equalising goal with just minutes to go. and Leicester coming out on top. It had all the ingredients of what the FA Cup is about yesterday. I don't know what it was like being there, as you said, but it did for me watching it on the television. I'm sorry.
Yeah, certainly that second half was so packed full of drama, wasn't it? I mean, I suppose in the first half it was very cagey. We all thought it was going to be a cagey game. Two sides very well organised, and they're of a similar level. So we knew it was going to be about the fine margins, those little moments of magic. You mentioned the Schmeichel save, the Tielemans putting it in the top corner from 30 yards out. It was always going to be decided by those little key moments. And let's hope, because the FA Cup has lost its lustre in some respects, let's hope that this final energises it again. The Champions League has become all-powerful in many ways, but I think what we've seen with the reaction to the Super League proposals is that football fans are going, hang on a second, you know, it's not all about money. It's about the emotion as well. It's about football grabbing you by the heart. And we certainly saw that at Wembley when Leicester City won the FA Cup.
And Rob, just a word on Chelsea. Where to now? They face, obviously, Leicester again on Tuesday in pursuit of a top four finish. As I mentioned, they got the Champions League final with Man City on the 29th of May. It could yet be a great season for them, but it could all end in tears too for Thomas Tuchel, and that has to be the worry.
Well, Tuesday is an absolutely huge game for both clubs, and the pressure will be on both of them, especially after that dramatic winner for Liverpool, Alisson scoring from a corner in the 95th minute. That's really put pressure on them now, because in many ways, it's winner takes all. Leicester win, they've booked their place in the Champions League. Likewise, Chelsea were giving themselves a fantastic opportunity, and it'll be Leicester that will be vulnerable to Liverpool. So yes, if they lose to Leicester and then they go to the Champions League where they will be underdogs against Man City and it all goes wrong, it would have ended up being a real terrible end to what looked like a really promising season for Chelsea.
Okay, all right, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks for joining us. That's Rob Tanner of The Athletic. In terms of women's football, Barcelona took the Champions League. Big win over Chelsea, 4-0. Their first win in the competition for Barcelona, 4-0 winners over Chelsea. Here at home in the Women's National League, the results from the weekend passed. Shelburne 5, Galway 0. By the way, Galway's Rachel Cairns won the Women's National League Player of the Month award. Piemont United 3, Cork City 1-2 in that game for Eleanor Ryan Doyle. Wexford Youth 7, Bohemians 1. We spoke to Kylie Murphy on the podcast last week, and what does she do? She goes off and scores 2 of the 7, 1 from the penalty spot for Wexford in that 7-1 win over Bohemians. And it finished Athlone Town 0, DLR Waves 1 at Athlone Town Stadium. Carla McManus with an early goal. So the table, well, it's still Piemont United with 100% record, 6 wins from 6 outings. Wexford Youths 2 points adrift on 16 points, albeit they played a game more. Shelburne on 15 points and DLR Waves on 13 points. Lads, before we wrap things up for another week, just a couple of things worth touching on perhaps. James, Waterford have a new manager. We'll have to wait and see. Mark Burcham has been appointed. He'll be taking charge very shortly. Former Queen's Park Rangers player. It's perhaps another roll of the dice from Waterford, so it'll be interesting to see how this one works out.
Yeah, it'd be interesting enough. He's actually in the country at the moment. I believe he did a Zoom meeting with the squad, but he has to obviously go under quarantine before he can take control. So it looks like the Derry game is going to be the first game he's going to be in charge of. Interesting appointment. QPR underage, and as well, I think he was in New York as well as an assistant manager, a coach there. So it's interesting. This is his first senior job. He's come in off the back of what can be only described as unstable management over the last year and a half at Waterford. So he's in for a big, big job, I think.
Gary, one of your old teammates, doing so, so well across the way. Jamie McGrath, named St Mirren's Player of the Year, 17 goals. It's been some season since he moved.
Yeah, he's been terrific since he moved over there. I think he's grown into that role. He's had a terrific season this year. I don't think there's any Irish player scored more goals than 17 goals in the Scottish Premier League and cups. And he scored in all competitions. Scored against Rangers as well. So he'd be delighted with his form and how he's been playing. And I think he's a shoe-in basically for a call up for these couple of internationals that are coming up. I don't think you could overlook him. Player playing out of his skin at his club, and I think he should be in the next squad.
And of course, Stephen would know him so well from the Dundalk days. Are you surprised? I know he's a quality player, but are you surprised at how well he's adapted to life in Scotland?
No, I'm not really, because I think Jamie kind of flew under the radar a little bit at Dundalk because, you know, you've Pat Hoban knocking in 20-odd goals a season and stuff like that. But when you look at your breakdown, I suppose, Dundalk's success, where, you know, Jamie and, say, Robbie Benson had been fundamental to that, and he probably flew under the radar in terms of his importance to the team, and it wasn't until he was gone out of it, and you see what he's done this year, and particularly in Scotland, and how evident it is that player wasn't replaced over the last couple of years. I'm not really surprised. I think, you know, he always had the talent and the ability. I think, you know, players, I remember him coming on against St. Pat's in one of his first games, the first time I ever seen him, and he came on for 10 minutes, and we were glad he wasn't on for the whole game because he tore the boys apart for 10 minutes. So, like, he's got huge quality and great ability, and I think, you know, I think he's capable of stepping up further again.
Yeah, and I guess the big thing is now, you know, not to say he didn't score goals at Dundalk, but he's really added goals to his game in Scotland.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was one of the things that he probably would have known himself going away that he needed to add. And it's one of those things, he probably would have went away earlier if he had scored a few more goals. I think Jamie in the Dundalk team a lot of the time would slip lads in for goals as opposed to, you know, creating the opportunity himself. I think he probably, Stephen, you say he got more of a kick out of, you know, laying on a pass for somebody else to score a goal than he did actually scoring himself. But he certainly, you know, changed that around, and look, he's got plenty of goals, and he's finished the season really strong. I think he's got three or four goals in the last month as well. So it's you know, testament to him and the levels of fitness that he would have in order to kind of keep going right till the end of the season. And I'm delighted for him having such a good season. And I think, like I said, I think you know, Stephen will be well aware of how well he's doing. And you know, for a player like him to get called up for the junior internationals, I think it's more than he deserves, or he certainly deserves it anyway.
Yeah, speaking of Irish players scoring a lot of goals this season, it would be unfair for us not to mention Owen Doyle at Bolton, 19 goals in the season and a promotion as well. So it'd be unfair for us not to mention him. He seems to be scoring loads of goals in the UK as well.
Absolutely, and has been for the last few years as well. Just a word as well, Gary, Richie Towell, another of your teammates. It seems to be all about your teammates today, your ex-teammates. Towell heading to Shamrock Rovers from the 1st of July.
Yeah, I think, you know,
everybody's your teammate, ex-teammate.
Yeah, everyone, over the course of 20 years, I've had plenty of teammates. That's a significant move for Shamrock Rovers. I don't think Shamrock Rovers have really played as well as they had last year. But look, you know, they've got the results. I think they're probably missing that creativity of Jack and Aaron. Now, I know Dylan Watts picked up an injury as well in the last game. But I just think, you know, Richie will add, you know, plenty to that team. You know, he's a real goal threat, and the season he had before he went, you know, he was phenomenal. So, you know, it's another a worrying blow, I suppose, for Dundalk, that, you know, he decided he would have the pick of which club to go to, and he decided to go there for obvious reasons, as it looks like now. But I think that'll be a real injection for Shamrock Rovers, and, you know, will really boost them coming towards Europe as well.
Okay, fixtures of the weekend on Friday: Pats against Bowes at 5:45. All the games, of course, on Watch LOI. Waterford against Derry, 5:45. Then three games at 7:45. Dundalk against Shamrock Rovers, that's the big one. Finn Harps against Drogheda United, and Sligo Rovers taking on Longford Town. In the first division, all the games on Friday: Athlone Cove, Cabinteely against Treaty, Cork City against Galway United, Shells against UCD, and Wexford against Bray Wanderers. And in the Women's National League on Saturday, four games: Bowes against Shelburne, Cork City against Treaty United, and Galway against Athlone. DLR Waves taking on Piemont in the big game of the weekend in the Women's National League. That's all we have time for on this week's edition of the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Thanks to Gary Rogers, and also, as ever, to James O'Toole. Until the next time, from me, Adrian Innes. Bye-bye.